Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got my guest co-host with me this afternoon. Her name is Angela Lang of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. And on behalf of Angela and I, we are thrilled to welcome Stephanie Bloomingdale. She is the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. And I will say this with reverential respect and reverential respect and humility, perhaps, that you are the first female president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. And so as a woman who has worked my entire life, thank you not only for what you do to represent labor, but women in labor and women in labor unions. Thank you, Stephanie, for being here.
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Maggie, for inviting me to be here with you today for the show. And also, it's so great to see Angela Lang. Yes, I've known Angela for a very long time, so it's really nice to be here for the first time on your show. And I know you have a lot of big topics, so hopefully I won't screw it up too much here.
That's not possible, Stephanie.
We're breezy over here.
Yeah, we're very breezy. You just talk about what you know and what you're passionate about, and we'll be peachy keen. Let's get right into it. The Big Beautiful Bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans. But what I think is, as we've watched union membership rates decline since Republicans really launched an all-out attack on organized labor back starting with Richard Nixon, folks don't always understand that even if you are not yourself in a labor union, unions serve an absolutely critical function in so many ways about the labor marketplace. And where unions have a strong presence and where membership on a per capita basis is higher, you see higher hourly wages, you see greater real wage increases, you see more benefits that actually meet the needs of working families. Put that together for folks. This is just sort of a baseline center. Why does organized labor benefit everybody who actually works for a paycheck and not just those in the union?
Well, Maggie, that's a really great place to start, because it really, by setting up this conversation in this way, we're thinking about where do workers derive their power and their power in our economy. And, we can go way back in history, but the general idea is that when people come together with their coworkers to have a voice in the workplace, to negotiate a contract, to increase wages and benefits and put those in a contract, which means that they can be guaranteed those benefits, those workers do better. And by having more workers in unions, not only those workers who are organized into those contracts or into those areas do better for themselves, it also creates a ripple effect throughout the entire economy. Now, when you go back to the kind of benefits that we, some people, not us, but take for granted, like the 40-hour work week, or like we have a very terrible minimum wage, but there is a minimum wage.
It exists, yes.
It exists. And if they could go below that, believe me, they would. And also, any of the kind of the OSHA laws we have, the worker safety laws, the protections for our kids in the workplace. These kind of protections were not given to us by politicians. They were not handed to us by corporate bosses. These were things that that were fought for by working men and women throughout this country. And so it's really important to understand where that came from, and then the struggle that has existed since the beginning of time between the owners of the capital or the business and those of us who work to make their product. So what we want is, in organized laborers, we don't want to have all of that, but we want a fair share. We want a fair share of that profit to be able to take care of ourselves and our families and our communities. And when we have more people in labor unions, and you've seen that in Wisconsin as well, that we had, you know, a good amount of unionization, especially in manufacturing. And we also had it in the public sector, and I'm sure we'll get into that more. But when there are attacks on labor, this reduces all of our ability to have good wages and working conditions and benefits.
Folks, that's Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, joining Angela and I for this half hour. Stephanie, I'm an economist, and it always sort of defied just baseline logic to me that folks did not understand, or that some folks claim to not understand, that the individual worker does not stand in a position of bargaining power parity with the business owner, and that unions, by joining together like a mutual fund for working conditions, if you will, that is the way that workers can attempt to stand on some level of bargaining power, less disparity there. It's not quite at parity either, but less disparity. And that critically, if you believe and you say you believe in capitalism, guess what? Capitalism relies on actual free choice, which necessitates a level playing field, that people can actually come together and bargain, not that a business owner can effectively extort, abuse, and then discard labor at will. So it's always been a bit of and I know this is fairly high level, Stephanie, but I just didn't understand that. Isn't it totally obvious for any of us that have worked where we weren't unionized that often our interactions with our bosses are take it or leave it propositions? And we have all felt that bargaining power disparity if we are people who have worked for paychecks at any point in time in our lives. And I don't care how fancy the job is. I worked at some of the largest law firms in the world. There was not a 40-hour work week, and I've seen some of the most abusive behaviors that I think people can come up with in those places. So this goes all across the working spectrum. What do you say to people that say unions and successful business can't coexist at the same time? That if a business is quote unquote forced to have unionized workforce, well, there goes the business.
Well, I think that one of the points that you made here, there's so many things to talk about here, but that if you really want a free market, and capitalism is supposed to exist in a free market, then they shouldn't be artificially reducing the free will, the free power of working people. And every time they have an anti-union law or an anti-union law firm that comes in to dissuade people from making that own free choice, they are no longer acting in a free market sensibility. So in terms of people, when they say to them, well, you can do this without your coworkers, well, really what they're saying is that they want to be able to negotiate with that individual worker on their own. And we know that when workers come together, they have more power, and we have an understanding of what everyone else is making for the job. And we are raising oftentimes, sometimes jobs that would be considered not great jobs. We in the union movement, what our job is to make them good jobs. Mm-hmm. Which means to have them have a decent wage for a family supporting wage, make sure that they have benefits, and make sure that it's safe on the job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when anybody says, oh, well, those jobs are no good, the way to make a job that's not currently great is to organize and make those good jobs. Because all of us, anybody who works deserves dignity and respect on the job.
Absolutely. So I want to go back to this big, brutal bill, because I refuse to call it a big, beautiful bill, right? It is an attack on workers. It is an attack on so many different things. And, you know, I think about my time when I was over at SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, and like how folks were just like not trying to hear anything. Folks were frustrated. I'm very curious of what like union membership is feeling right now, especially acknowledging that there are some union members that may have voted for Trump. Like, are folks internalizing what this could actually mean for them, their loved ones, their families, their workplaces?
What are folks feeling?
Yeah.
Their jobs. Well, I mean, I think that when we're looking at this, what are you calling it, Angela? Big brutal bill?
Yep. Big brutal bill.
Okay. Big brutal bill. That is a good word to use for it, because if you really look at this bill, it gives so much to the ultra wealthy, so much to the ultra wealthy, and reduces the benefit for working people. So if you add it all up, if you are not in the top 20%, if you're not in the top 10%, if you're not in the top 1%, you are not, overall, you are not getting a benefit out of this bill. Now, there are some things that are put in there that I was talking with Maggie before. There is a no tax on overtime, and there's no tax on tips. Now, I'm not giving out tax advice, so you know, please don't refer to me when you're filling out your taxes. But when I really started digging into this, it's not as easy as it sounds, and it's not as good as it sounds, because a lot of our tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes in the first place. Mm-hmm. So it's something that sounds really great. And if you are a tipped worker, okay, you know, you're going to be able to fill that out, and you're going to have to do that when you fill out your taxes. But compare that to the drastic cuts in our food and nutrition programs. Compare that to the drastic cuts in Medicaid. This is just very, very overwhelming for people. And I don't really think that it's necessarily hit everyone yet, because when I'm researching this, in terms of if somebody's going to be eligible for these programs, they have to now register for those programs at, like, what is it, every 6 months. And it used to be at a longer period of time. So this is not only going to add to the burden of the people that need this assistance, but it's also it's going to require the state and the county to do a lot more to be able to figure out the eligibility requirements. So overall, there are some really, really big gifts in here for the ultra wealthy.
Yeah. When I heard about, oh, we're going to do no tax on tips and no tax on overtime, my immediate thought was, as the wealthiest among us that need nothing more dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps. You deserve better. We're going to come back with Stephanie Bloomingdale, the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, and my guest co-host for this hour, Angela Lang, executive director of Block. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Up next, what about the union worker that votes for Trump? How do we get through? We discuss next.